reading today is going to come from the Gospel of John. I'll be reading from chapter 2, verses 1 through 11. On the third day, there was a wedding in Cana of Galilee, and the mother of Jesus was there. Jesus and his disciples had also been invited to the wedding. And when the wine gave out, the mother of Jesus said to him, "They have no wine." And Jesus said to her, "Woman, what concern is that to you and to me? My hour has not yet come." His mother said to the servants, "Do whatever he asks of you." Now standing there were six stone water jars for the Jewish rites of purification, each holding 20 or 30 gallons. And Jesus said to them, "Fill those jars with water." And they filled them to the brim. And he said to them, "Now draw some out and take it to the chief steward." So they took it, and when the steward tasted the water, it had become wine. And he did not know where it came from, though the servants who had drawn it out of the water knew. The steward called him to the bridegroom and said, "Everyone serves the good wine first and then the inferior wine after the guests have become drunk, but you've kept the good wine until now." Jesus did this, the first of his signs in Cana of Galilee, and revealed his glory to his disciples. May we add blessing and understanding to the reading of these words. Let's remain seated as we sing together our There we are. My message this morning is entitled Transforming for Justice. The story of Jesus turning water into wine has always sort of, it's always sort of bothered me. Not because Jesus makes wine, and I have some issue with alcoholic beverages. I promise you I do not. I've always been bothered by sort of how it happens, or maybe how we end up interpreting it. The part that bothers me is the exchange between Mary and Jesus. Once it's clear that this wedding party has run out of wine, Mary turns to Jesus and says, "They have no more wine." Now, that seems like a pretty much just a totally reasonable thing to say. I probably actually said something pretty close to it at a wedding. "Oh no, they're out of Cab Sav. Does that mean I have to drink Chardonnay now?" So it seems normal enough. Seems like a reasonable question, but Jesus says, "Woman, you know what? I'm going to stop right there. I am almost 48 years old, almost. And if I had ever said to my mother, 'Woman,' I have to imagine I might not have actually made it to 48, which isn't actually true. My mother was wonderful and would have never hurt me at all. But it would not be a positive thing for me to have ever addressed her as woman. So Jesus says, "Woman, what concern is that to you and to me?" Woman, what concern is that to you and to me? Well, for one, you're actually at the wedding and they ran out of wine. I mean, how are you supposed to make it through a wedding without some wine? Kidding aside, though, isn't what Jesus said a bit reactionary of a response to someone simply saying they have no wine? Which makes it all the more interesting to me, and frankly, all the more bothersome, that the focus on that interchange is so frequently on Mary. And all she said was they have no more wine. So frequently her words get twisted into Mary was being a typical Jewish mother, worrying over something that was none of her business and trying to manipulate her son. After much reflection, I've decided that that's why this story bothers me so much, because of the way that it's been taught. Reading it very closely, it seems to me you actually have to work really hard to make Mary sound bad in this. And sadly, many ministers and even some scholars have done just that. Now, if you bracketed out all of the assumptions that we bring to the story about Jesus and just read what's there, this is what you get. A mother says, "They're out of wine." A son says, Mom, it's none of your business, okay? And somehow, we read into it the stereotype of a Jewish mother and a divine son, and get an overbearing Jewish mother trying to manipulate her amazing son to perform a miracle to show off for all of the crowd and make her proud. At least that's what many ministers and even scholars have actually made it out to be. Well, at this point, I've actually read the story through a few dozen times, and I don't buy that kind of reading of this story. So I set out to figure out what might really be going on here. Being that this is the first miracle in the book of John, one of the really interesting things to do is to look at all the other miracles in John, look at when they occur and what they might be trying to tell us. But one of the things that you quickly see is that the miracles are always set in the middle of everyday life. It seems to me that that tells us that what God is, what should be considered divine, what should be considered life-giving, is defined less by the magical and mysterious and more by the everyday life. Now, given that alone, I kind of like this first miracle in John being at a wedding. Now, another theme in John is the need to prevent injustices, even ordinary, everyday injustices. And I think this may actually be getting more to the point of what's really going on here in this wedding story from John. Weddings then, much like today, were very important events. And running out of wine would have probably brought some degree of embarrassment and shame upon the families. Now, keeping in mind that before his birth, Mary sang of Jesus saying, "His mercy extends to those who oppose him. And he has filled the hungry with good things." Both of these are statements of justice and love. Considering that it's reasonable to think that Mary's concern here at the wedding her concern at the wedding was the injustice and the shame that she knew would probably come upon the families that were there. And she would not only want Jesus to know about it, she would know that he might be able to do something about it. And so at first, Jesus actually resists. He says, this is none of our business. The timing isn't right. But then he relents. And as Mary song says, he fills the hungry with good things. He turns water into wine. It really doesn't matter if this were an actual miracle. The story tells us something really important about Jesus' strong inclination to prevent injustices. With tomorrow being MLK Day and with Martin Luther King being one of my all-time heroes, not to mention being a minister who did his best to live his life following the teachings of Jesus and working diligently to overcome injustices, with tomorrow being MLK Day, it's hard for me not to put today's scripture reading about the beginning of Jesus' ministry into conversation with the beginning of Dr. King's ministry. You see, just like Jesus was reluctant in our story from today, Dr. King was reluctant at first as well. And in his story, Rosa Parks plays the part of Mary. She boarded a bus in Montgomery, Alabama during the time of segregation, and unlike the popular story of this goes, she did not sit down in the front row. She sat down about 10 rows back where the colored section began. And then the bus started to fill until it was almost overfull, and four white men came up to her and told her and her seatmates to move back. Now, while it is true that Rosa was tired from that day's work, it's also true that she was an active member of the local NAACP. She saw this injustice happening, and she quietly stood up for justice by remaining seated. You see, at that time, there was this fresh, new, young minister in Montgomery, Martin Luther King. And as a local civil rights activist started the Montgomery bus boycott, they looked to this new young minister to be their voice. Martin wasn't actually a leader in the civil rights movement at that point. At first, he thought that the timing just wasn't right. But then he relents. He becomes the voice of a movement that began to change the nation. Both Jesus and Martin transformed things for the sake of justice. Jesus didn't just transform wine that day. He transformed the outcome of that event. He didn't just try to transform the existing dominant religion. He tried to transform the way that humanity related to each other. His death was meant to even transform our understanding of how far true love will go. And Martin didn't just transform the way that folks in Alabama thought about Jim Crow laws. He didn't just transform the way the nation thought about race relations. Martin transformed the idea of what our nation dreams that all people being created looks like. He transformed the very idea of what true justice looks like, not just for African Americans, not just for the garbage collectors, but for all of us. They, Jesus and Martin, were transformers for justice. Leaders much like many of our leaders in equality, from people like Dorothea Dix to Jimmy Carter to even Bill and Melinda Gates. Now, I'm not trying to equate Dr. King with Jesus in any way here. As a matter of fact, that's not something that Dr. King would have appreciated from me. The comparison simply meant to be to show how far love will go when it's trying to follow the teachings of great spiritual leaders in addressing the inequalities in this world. It's meant to inspire those of us who wish to follow even the teachings of Jesus and other great leaders in social justice. It's meant to inspire us to be transformers towards justice. It's meant to ask each one of us to go up to the mountaintop, to see what the world is meant to be, to understand that we are all connected, and without true justice, without true justice, we all suffer. We must climb that mountain to the top and look out across the world and see that there are ties between us, ties between all the people of earth, ties of hope, ties of love. It is meant to encourage each of us to embrace each other. It's meant to encourage us to be transformers of justice in a world that is in constant need of real justice. If Dr. King were here today, he would tell you that he's not special, at least not any more special than any one of you. He'd tell us that he's not remarkable, at least not any more remarkable than any one of you, that he's not more capable of transforming the world towards justice, at least not any more than any one of you. Because in the end, we are all capable of making a difference. We are all capable of standing up when injustice happens. We're all capable of stretching out our arms to each other in love and embracing each other. Even those who look different than us, talk different than us, worship different than us, even those who we may think of as our enemy. And I know it's not always easy. Jesus tried to be reluctant at first. But as the life of Dr. King should actually teach us, if we are to follow the teachings of Jesus, then transforming towards justice, transforming the world so that more justice is present, is part of what we do on a daily basis. And while it may not be easy, and while we may be reluctant at times, the reward of that kind of life, the reward of that kind of following, the following of those teachings, is a life lived out in love and in grace. And while those of us here may never get to see that peaceful valley of a world cloaked in justice, I not only give thanks for the joy of being part of trying to bring it about, but I give thanks for the knowledge that the journey towards justice is transformative. And not just for those who it benefits, but ultimately, it's transformative for the whole world.